Kunti Devi is fearing separation from Krishna. And therefore she is offering her prayers, and Krishna is upon his chariot, very close to heading for Dwarka. She has offered her obeisances to the wonder that is the personality of Godhead. Although he is the controller of everything, the Purusham Adya, the Adi Purusha, the Supreme Person, the original person, yet, although he is everywhere, inside everything, outside of everything, yet Alakshya Savabhutanam, no one can see him. Very mysterious. And why is that no one can see him? The answer is Maya Javani Kachanam. That the curtain of Maya covers everyone's eyes and disallows persons from actually seeing him, not recognizing him. Not seeing him means not recognizing him, practically speaking, although he may be right before one. And why does Krishna come? Those who are pure, who are not attached to the things of the material world, who can discriminate between matter and spirit, knowing themselves as souls, not as the body. In other words, advanced transcendentalists. Krishna comes to give within their hearts devotional service to help them advance further, Kunti Devi says. So therefore, she ends that statement of text 20 with a plea in the guise of a question. If you've come to help the advanced transcendentalists, how is it that we who don't have the ability to discriminate between matter and spirit, to disassociate ourselves in our identity from our body, who I tend to identify with the body, don't have, because this process, this jnana yoga, is done through the intelligence. One has to have very clear intelligence. So how can we then? We are just women. How can we know you perfectly? And then in the next verse, she says, she offers her obeisances to the Lord, who is known in relationship to his devotees, who has become, Krishnaya has become the son of Vasudeva, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows. And so perhaps we take that for granted, that Krishna wandered around Vrindavan. For granted in the sense that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Purusham Adya, who every religion in the world is worshipping. Every person in the world is actually desiring, either correctly or incorrectly. Every entity has turned their back on in the material world, who with just a small fragment of his potency is wandering here in Vrindavan. And this is Krishna. How wonderful. So she offers, again, Kunti Devi offers her respectful obeisances to this Lord who is so hard to attain. And he is like a lotus in so many different ways, from his lotus feet to the navel depression in his abdomen is lotus-like. His glance is like a lotus because he has lotus eyes. In every way, Krishna is like a lotus in so many ways. Very cooling, delicate, fragrant as a lotus. As a lotus is an auspicious, it brings auspiciousness to the world. Krishna's descent brings auspiciousness to the world. And also as the lotus is not touched in any way by water, even though it might be within the water, similarly, Krishna is not touched by the material energy, although he appears to be in the material energy. So she offers her obeisance to this Krishna, who is somehow the Supreme Lord, is standing before her, who is a devotee. And then, and the verses will begin today, she remembers again how Krishna has saved her and her family, the Pandavas. And not only her family, but also Devaki. My respectful obeisances unto you, O Lord. Namo Pankajanabhaya. Oh, wrong verse. Next one. Yata Rishikesha Kalena Devaki Kamsena Rudatyucharam Sucharpita Vimochitaham Chasahatma Javibo Twayaivanatena Moho Vibhaganat. Oh, Rishikesh. What does Rishikesh mean? Yes. In the Sanskrit. Rishika means senses, and Isha, the master or controller of the senses, Rishikesh. So, oh, Rishikesh, master of the senses and lord of lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa. How did Krishna do that? How did Krishna release Devaki from the clutches of Kamsa? How did Krishna kill Kamsa? Huh? In the wrestling arena. He pulled him down by his hair and then he dragged him around. Why did he drag the dead body of Kamsa around? Huh? Two? He was, yeah, I never thought of it like, but he was already quite dead. Yes. 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 And to in that way, to give all the devotees great pleasure. Because this demon had been killed. He had caused so much trouble. He was so oppressive. So you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. Krishna, you protected us again and again. Not only did he save Arjuna from the Brahmastra and solve the family quarrel, and not only did he save the Pandavas and Uttara and the unborn Maharaj Prickit within the womb, but Krishna was always saving the Pandavas and the other devotees, continuously. Now, Devaki, Krishna's mother, was in a less difficult situation than Kunti Devi, even though they're both mentioned here in the verse, because Devaki had her husband still alive and Kunti Devi didn't. She just had her children. So therefore, she was in a more vulnerable position. Usually in the material world, people, the last thing a person wants is to be vulnerable. And this is the reason. What does vulnerable mean? Yeah, lacking protection. I'm thinking of a particular way of looking at it. Yes, you're sort of powerless to protect yourself. You're powerless. So why in this world do people really want to gather money? People want money, of course, to enjoy themselves. But there are people who have so much wealth already, and still they want more money, because money, whether for enjoyment or for any other reason, means power. Money means power. It is Shakti. It is Krishna's Shakti, actually. Money means power, and with that power, you can do many things. So money means the ability to control. And therefore, people really want money because they don't want to be vulnerable or powerless. But in spiritual life, devotees do not take shelter of whatever power they happen to have. They take shelter of the source of the power. So to be vulnerable in the material world, or in the material world, being vulnerable is the most dangerous thing. And in the spiritual world, in spiritual life, to be vulnerable is the greatest blessing. Prabhupada will explain this in his purport. We'll read. Oh, it's quite close to the end. The conclusion is that Krishna endows more favor to a devotee who is in greater dangers. Sometimes he puts his pure devotees in such dangers because in that condition of helplessness, the devotee becomes more attached to the Lord. And the more the attachment is there for the Lord, the more success is there for the devotee. Attachment, holding on tightly. This is the goal, to become attached to Krishna. So Kunti is remembering now the dangers that she and her children had to go through. And in each and every case, Krishna protected them. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poison cake. Who fed the Pandavas the poison cake? Duryodhana, yes. Bhim, specifically. From a great fire. Who set the great fire? Duryodhana. From cannibals. I don't know. Oh, that was maybe that. Hadimba. Yes. And where was that? Anyone know where that pastime took place? Ekachakra, yes. And what is Ekachakra very famous for? What? One more time? Isn't it nice to say that again and again? Nityananda Prabhu's birthplace. Raise your hand if you've ever been to Ekachakra Gram. So nice place. From the vicious assembly, that was the Kauravas and Dice, from sufferings during our exile in the forest and from the battle where great generals fought, and now you have saved us from the weapon of Asatama. Prabhupada's purport. The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother. Otherwise, she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into difficulty, to one difficulty after another, for years and years together. So what is fortunate? Usually, we judge fortune and misfortune very, very superficially. There's an old story that was going around the New Age circuit a few years ago about this man in some country. He was a farmer, and a horse came into his corral just by itself. So his neighbor came to him and said, "Oh, you are very fortunate." And the man said, "What is fortunate and what is unfortunate is hard to say." And then his son, oh yes, and then the horse ran away the next day. And his neighbor came to him and said, "Oh, you are very unfortunate." And the man said, "What is fortunate and what is unfortunate is hard to say." And then a few days later, that same horse who ran away came running back, leading a whole pack of other horses into his corral. So his neighbor came to him and said, "Oh, you are very fortunate." And you'll never guess what he answered. "Oh, what is fortunate and what is unfortunate is hard to say." And then the next day his son wanted to break the wild horses and make them tame so that they could be ridden or sold. So he got on top of a very wild one, and that horse bucked him up, and he fell down and broke his leg. And the neighbor came and said, "Oh, very unfortunate." And he said, "What is fortunate and what is unfortunate is hard to say." And then the next day, the army passed through because there was a war going on nearby. And they were enlisting all young men. They were conscripting them into the army. And they wanted to take his son, the man's son. But the man's son had a broken leg, so they didn't take him. So the neighbor came and said, "Oh, very fortunate." And his reply, you already know. But really, in the material world, what we think is going to be the source of our fortune can so easily turn into our misfortune. Even if we succeed materially, we become so attached, that means we're always fearful. So is it fortunate to be fearful? And then ultimately, at the time of death, we'll lose it. Is it fortunate to lose that which we've worked so hard to gain? So what is for? Actually, in the material world, everything is ashub, by definition. Unfortunate, inauspicious. And in spiritual life, everything is suba, or auspicious. So the difficulties, one after another, that the Pandavas, Kunti Devi and the other five were put into. They were put into trouble by Duryodhana, his party, due to the kingdom. And each and every time, the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. So were they fortunate or unfortunate? Most fortunate. Once Bhim was administered poison in a cake. Once they were put into a house made of shellac and set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged out and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in the vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth. And Duryodhana's party failed to see her naked. Does anyone know the story in the Mahabharata that preceded that, came before that? Krishna cut Mataji, you know, Krishna cut himself. Do you know that? Anyone know? He had something like, yes, Krishna, there was some injury to Krishna, and Draupadi ripped her fancy sari to bind up Krishna's hand, and Krishna said, "For this, who knows how much sari you'll get for this?" Never a loss in giving something to Krishna. So then when they were trying to, and they took her out at an improper time, and they were trying to embarrass her and humiliate her because Draupadi was very strong and she would insult these people. And so beautiful, the Kauravas. And they brought her out and they were trying to take off her sari, and she was holding on with one hand and calling out, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Help, Krishna, save." And then finally she stopped because Dushyanta was much more powerful. And she called with her full heart, "Govinda." And in the nectar devotion, Bhakti Samita Sindhu, there is a quotation saying, of course, Krishna incarnated as so much sari at that time, and they couldn't pull it all. It was so much, they became exhausted. But Krishna said, by that one calling out, that one crying out, that one fully surrendered chant of Krishna's name, Govinda, he said that Draupadi has purchased me. I cannot forget her by that. Because of that one calling out full-heartedly of Govinda. I cannot forget her. She won't leave my mind. How wonderful. This is Krishna, Bhaktivatsala. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhim had to fight with the man-eater demon, Hadimbarakshasa. But the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, all powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was the Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the surviving descendants of the Kurus, Maharaj Prickett. It's really interesting how all the tribulations that the Pandavas had undergone, they were still continuing. They weren't distant memories. Just a few moments before the Brahmastras were coming at them to kill them. So this wasn't something in the past, and you sit back and all remember the old days when things were so difficult, and you sit back and reminisce. No, and it's very important to remember this because of what Kunti Devi is going to say right now. These calamities were continuously happening to, and they were happening up to the same moment. And there was Krishna on the chariot preparing to leave. So therefore, Kunti Devi says, Viparashantu tashashva tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsya rapunar bhava darshanam. Everyone. Viparashantu tashashva tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsya rapunar bhava darshanam. Vipra, this is quite amazing because most of us, at least some of us, we're tired of all the anxieties and all the tribulations and all the disasters hitting us in the head again and again and again. And we're desiring liberation from all these things. We want peace, liberation. Finally, so many years, I want something. I want my reward. I want some happiness, some peace. And what is Kunti Devi saying? I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. This is how a pure devotee thinks. Let the calamities come. Let, Prickett Maharaj says, let the snake bird's bite come. Let this happen. Vritrasura, okay, let me die. Haridas Thakur says, oh, the people are beating him, and they're saying, please, if we go back and we haven't killed you, we're going to get into so much trouble, please die. Okay, you want me to die, I'll die. Devotion is a very mysterious thing. Prabhupada's purport. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive who have performed some pious activities worship or begin to worship the Lord. This is the impetus. What's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Cha jani cha bharatasava. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme Lord due to being misled by the illusory energy. And what's that verse? Namam duskritino muda. The ones who are not sukritina but duskritino. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hoofs of a calf. Such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord, and they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. One time the devotees, Seth Sutranj told me this, and 22nd Avenue asked Prabhupada, what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? And Prabhupada replied by singing this verse in Sanskrit. Samasritam ye parapalava plavam Mahatpadam punyaya so murari Kripam buddhir vatsapadam param padam 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 yad vipadam natesham. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hoofs of a calf. Vatsapadam. Not very hard at all. The ocean of material existence shrinks down to that size. If one has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which means one is a devotee, one is constantly fixed in remembrance in him and in his service. Such persons, practically they reside in the spiritual world already. They don't belong in the material world, which is vipadam. There is danger at every step. Prabhupada continues, this material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. So the devotees differ from non-devotees in that their attempt is not to make the world a peaceful place because they know that the very nature of the world is calamitous. It is impossible. There is birth. It has to happen. There is death. It has to happen. And in between there's disease and old age and this misery and that misery and that misery caused by this person, that circumstance, and by myself. This is the very nature of the material world. So the devotee, different from the non-devotee, doesn't spend his energy in trying to make adjustments in the material world. Because again, it's the very nature of the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, to be frustrating or worse. Rather, they make the effort to be absorbed in Krishna. It is not that a devotee is some type of a masochist that enjoys the calamities of the material and praying for calamity after calamity because he likes to suffer. Not at all. No particular liking for suffering. But he knows what is real. And he knows how to change a difficult situation which must happen in the material world, a calamity which must happen in the material world, to a window of opportunity to get closer to Krishna. That's what it is. Like, what example did we hear just a few chapters ago? One young boy, his mother and only protector, was bitten by a poisonous snake. Who was that? Narada Muni. So it wasn't, he wanted to go with the Bhaktivedantas, but he wasn't sitting there praying, may my mother be bitten by a snake. He wasn't a cruel demon like that. He was a responsible fellow. But when something happened that was really a calamity, his protector was taken away by the force of time. He saw Krishna in that, and he walked through the door that Krishna opened, and he never turned back. So how to see Krishna in the material world? That's tateyena kampamsu samikshamano. How to see Krishna's mercy? And the key, of course, is to be a devotee and to have full faith and trust and dependence on Krishna. Again, the material world is certified, Prabhupada says, by the Lord as a disastrous place. Place full of calamities. So we have to make the best use of a bad bargain. That was the term that Prabhupada would often use. And and we shouldn't be less intelligent, prepare plans to adjust those calamities. When I first started chanting, I remember Rupanuga Prabhu giving the example. It's like you're in the ring fighting with a big professional heavyweight prize fighter, and there you are. So you may be able, and you may be able to duck. But that ducking and missing that blow doesn't mean success for you. You may feel, what a relief. But that isn't really success, because it's just a matter of time before you get knocked out. That's the material world. Everyone is going to be knocked out, down for the count, finished. Calamity. What could be a greater calamity than that? Every person that you love is going to die. Miserable. Every person you care about, that you only want good for, is going to get sick. If they're lucky, they get sick and reach old age, that they suffer from old age. That's fortune. This is the nature of the material world. So it is full of calamities. So they have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of the saint person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes. That Prabhupada puts the perspective right there. This is the nature of the world. Unavoidable misfortunes must come. One should accept them, because why? Because they're there. They're unavoidable. If you don't accept them, it doesn't do any good, because they're there. And accepting these unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. Make the best use of a bad bargain. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger, there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the nine devotional services is always a forward step on the path of going back to Godhead. So too, somehow or another, in difficult situations, and from my own experience, I can say that it is much easier to preach to others about this than when it's happening to you, when your mind is disturbed and, you know, you're angry or in pain or something. And or you've lost something in lamentation, very hard to focus, to actually just say, oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. But that's required, and that's why the association of devotees is required as well. Now, what will allow us to do this, to actually call out to Krishna? Kunti Devi will explain that in the next verse, a very important verse. Janmaishwaya Shutashribiredamanamadapumam Naiva Ahatya Bibdatum Vaitamakinchanagovchara Janmaishwaya Shutashribiredamanamadapumam Naiva Ahatya Bibdatum Vaitamakinchanagovcharam Janma. Good birth, Aishwarya, opulence, Shuta, education, Shribir, beauty, Edamana, progressively increasing this, Mada, intoxicated. So if one is intoxicated by his possession of Janma, his good birth, good family, Aishwarya, material opulence, Shuta, his learning, Shri, his beauty, Edamana, Manapumam, a man intoxicated by this, by these things, thinking that they are worthy shelters. And we, again, speaking from experience, we use all our tricks, whatever works in the material world, works on people to control, manipulate circumstances, use intelligence, use good looks, use this, use charming personality, use your wit. But at the time of death, all these will prove so insufficient, completely insufficient. Completely insufficient. So therefore, when we try to use these things, it's intoxication because ultimately they're insufficient. So a person who has taken shelter of these opulences, these qualities, na eva arhati, na eva, certainly not arhati, deserves abhidhatum vai. He does not deserve, he has no ability to truly call out to you like Draupadi did. Because he's mixed, he's taken shelter of other things, not fully of Krishna. Tvam akinchana gochara. You are the property, you become purchased by those who possess nothing, easily approached. You're easily approached by those who possess nothing in the material world. What is this akinchana gochara? Not exactly who possess nothing, but who value, they may possess so many things in Krishna's service. But it is not where their shelter is. So if one holds no shelter in the material world, then that person can call out to Krishna fully, with a full heart feeling. Prabhupada's purport. Being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth and education and attractive personal beauty. We use these all the time. Yes, we should use them in Krishna's service, but we should not think that they are in any way a shelter, and this is a tendency. We use our cleverness, our this or that, to get us out of a difficulty, to pull us through, and we accept those things, those qualities that Krishna has given us as independent shelters, and they will fail us. This is the advancement of material civilization. Everyone wants to possess these. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him with feeling, O Govinda, O Krishna, not full-heartedly. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. But, there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. Just like when you go to the bazaar, Loi Bazaar, and all the merchants say, Hari Bol Prabhu? Hari Bol Prabhu? But what do you hear when they're saying Hari Bol Prabhu?
Come over here and spend your money with us.
Give me your money, Prabhu. Give me your money, give me your money, give your money. So Krishna, if we can hear, certainly Krishna can hear what's really there, what the real feeling and motivation is. So when we have our material satisfaction, I have this, I have that, and we're not calling out with our full heart, we actually cannot be so sincere, meaning fully depending on Krishna. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely high parentage, good wealth, high education, attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. The material covering of the spirit's pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. This is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign, as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. Like the Avanti Brahmana, he lost everything and he went out just depending on Krishna. He took advantage of the horrible situation he was in. Pingala, disappointment brings all success. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit to for entrance into the kingdom. I'd like to read some of Prabhupada's lecture. Actually, it's on the next verse, so I'll continue. Kunti Devi continues that I would rather lose everything. Look at my situation now. Here, before we were in the forest, we had nothing, we had lost our kingdom, we were completely kicked out, we were in one difficulty after another, but you were with us continuously. And now, Yudhisthira Maharaj, the king, the Pandavas are the princes, I am the queen mother, we have no difficulties. And you, my Lord, are leaving us. You're on the chariot, leaving. So which is fortunate, which is unfortunate? Kunti Devi has no doubt. She says that when I'm completely dependent, I can call out to you. Krishna, Krishna, like Draupadi called out. Because I have no other shelter, but as long as I'm thinking, this is my shelter, my money is my shelter, my bank account. I see this every time a disaster or something heavy happens to me, the first thing I do is count my money, see how much money I have in this account and in my wallet and over this. Shelter! So those things actually shelter, of course. So first thing has to be to turn to Krishna. And the second thing, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And the third and the fourth. So who is fortunate? Who is unfortunate? Who is holding on the tightest? The one who is akinchana, who doesn't possess anything within the material world. So Kunti Devi was actually like that. My obeisances unto you are unto you, namo kinchana vittaya, who are the property of the materially impoverished. Now, I'll read from this lecture that Prabhupada gave in Mayapur, October 1974, on this verse, on 27. Prabhupada says, Gaurakishore Das Babaji always remain Niskinchana. And his disciple, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he also remained Niskinchana, although he possessed so many temples, because nothing was for his personal enjoyment, but all was for Krishna. Gaurakishore Das Babaji was sitting by the side of a municipal lavatory. Because so many people will come for darshan and asirvad. He did not like it. Oh, Maharaj, give me blessings, make my bank account decrease, get my daughter married, etc. He did not like to be disturbed by these asirvad. People usually desire materialistic blessings and will not take any spiritual instruction. They are thinking that here is a saintly person and he'll bless me. So I have got now 1,000. I'll take 10,000. That's all. Therefore they come. Therefore it is a botheration. So Maharaj Mahindranath Nadi had organized one Sankirtan festival. So he came to Gaurakishore Das Babaji to invite him. So after many requests, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, Maharaj, you have got so many tenants. Why are you trying to make me also your tenant? You are a rich man, and as your tenants carry out your orders, so you also want me. Maharaj Mahendradi replied, no, sir, no, no, you are my lord. Whatever you say, I shall carry out. Will you carry out? Why not? So he said, don't go home. Sit down here, chant Hare Krishna. He fled away. You see? So he, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, was very humorous also. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, if you are so obedient, then I ask you, don't go home. Better give up your dress and chant Hare Krishna here. So he was a Kinchana. But, Prabhupada continues, Ramananda Roy, he was a Grihastha, very opulent and a governor. He is also a Kinchana because everything was for Jagannath. This is the distinction. On one side, Rupa Goswami, a renunciate, and on the other side, Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda Roy is the most confidential devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he is a Grihastha, because he is a Kinchana. As a Kinchana as Rupa Goswami. So we have to become a Kinchana. Then we shall realize Krishna. Therefore it is said, a Kinchana Gocharam. You are understandable only by a person who does not possess so-called material opulence. So we should always remember that whatever we are trying for in the material world, it is all for Krishna. Nothing is for us. And of course, it is not that being a poverty-stricken pauper will help one advance. Usually, even when Prabhupada went to Thailand, he passed through Bangkok, and he said the people are too poor to take to Krishna consciousness. Because when one is poverty stricken, what's on one's mind only? How to remove the poverty and get money. But yet the point is really true. Not that being a pauper helps one's spiritual advance, but selfish attempts to materially prosper does hinder one's spiritual advance. So Krishna is the property of those who possess nothing in the material world in the sense of for their sense enjoyment. So Kunti Devi continues, you have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the master and are master of the monists. So there is no way that one can purchase Krishna with anything other than devotion. And there's no way that one can have devotion if one's devotion is mixed with so many material desires. So, therefore we try, as Prabhupada explained in that other purport, to simplify our lives, not increase our material fever, but to decrease it, not accumulate, but try to become attached to Krishna and detached from Maya. Now, what I'd like to do now, for the last thing today, is go through this purport of Prabhupada's to 27 and just see how Prabhupada organized it. More than a half of the purport is his commentary on the first line of the verse, which is Namo Kinchana Vittaya, all obeisances unto you who are the property of the materially impoverished. Because Prabhupada often organizes his purports based on either the word by words or a line or a phrase. Here, why don't you read read the first paragraph, please. But yeah, will you be able to do it loudly so that if not, we can give you the microphone. You've translated it pretty good. Okay, now this paragraph moves into the second line. Prabhupada will begin. So that was all about my obeisance is unto you who are the property of the materially impoverished. Then navritta guna vrittaye, you are completely transcendental to the material modes of nature. So we'd like to... The next paragraph, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then this the last, from here until the end, is Prabhupada's comment on the third and the fourth line. Atmaram maya shantaya, self-satisfied and peaceful, and kaivalya pati, the master of the monists, and obeisances to them. Because the Lord is the property of the devotees, and the devotees are the property of the Lord reciprocally, the devotees are certainly transcendental to the modes of material nature. That is a natural conclusion. Such unalloyed devotees are distinct from the mixed devotees who approach the Lord for mitigation of miseries and poverty or because of inquisitiveness and speculation. The unalloyed devotees and the Lord are transcendentally attached to one another. For others, the Lord has nothing to reciprocate, and therefore he is called Atmarama, self-satisfied. Self-satisfied as he is, so in that one it's a mixture of the last line and moving into the third line. Self-satisfied as he is the master of all monists who seek to merge into the existence of the Lord. Such monists merge within the personal effulgence of the Lord called the Brahma Jyoti, but the devotees enter into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which are never to be misunderstood as material. So wonderful how after being led to the point of seeing how Krishna protects his devotees again and again and again, and even Kunti Devi saying so many examples of her and the Pandavas' protection by Krishna, but then hearing her say, I'd rather be in the dangerous position and be with you and have your association than be continuously protected or free from anxiety and be without you. So this is what the devotees are thinking, that what is valuable to them is not the protection that everyone naturally is looking for. Automatically, the devotee will be protected by the Lord. But yet what is valuable to the devotee is not the external protection, but to always be in the Lord's association in service. So how wonderful must be that association. In the material world, fear is the most driving basic force. But that is eclipsed by the sweetness of the association of the Lord. Questions or comments? Yes. Anyone have any realization why the Lord is called Rishikesh? It's certainly a name of Krishna that's shows that he's the master, but more than that, I don't. Prabhupada does translate it though, master of the senses and lord of lords, not just as master of the senses, so it must be in that sense. Yes. But he's not only the master of his senses, He's the master of our senses. But it also describes our... But he's also the master of our senses. That's the other meaning of... Nice. Giving pleasure to the senses of Devaki by releasing her. Yeah, the twist that I was thinking. I was wondering why you were on the edge of your seat the whole time. Yes. That how Krishna protects us. And we're being led up to this point to understand that we should be turning to Krishna for protection. And yes, we should be turning to Krishna for protection. But we shouldn't think that protection on the material level, being protected from a brahmastra or family quarrels or this difficulty or that difficulty, is the topmost benefit that comes from devotion. Because Kunti Devi, although saying, yes, protected, but amazingly enough, she's saying, I'd rather be in a difficult situation, meeting calamity day after day after day after day, difficulty, danger. But you were there. And now, when our situation is more or less secure, you're leaving. So what we're being brought to another level of understanding of what the fruit of devotion is. Yes, protection is there for Krishna's devotees by Krishna. But that's, first of all, not what the devotees want. And second of all, it's not the summit of the gift of devotion, of what devotion offers. But yet, we're being pulled towards Krishna by that in the earlier pastimes, in the earlier chapters. We're seeing how Krishna... See, what we're really seeing here, and what we will be seeing, is how Krishna is dealing with his devotees. That, I would call that the theme of these chapters, of 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Just watch very closely how Krishna is dealing with his devotees. Because this is the first time we're seeing Krishna in action in the Bhagavatam, and it's the last time that we're going to see him in action until the 10th canto, actually interacting. We're going to hear summaries in the 3rd chapter. So watch very carefully of what's going on. Yes, he's protecting his devotees, but there's something more deep and more wonderful that the devotees are getting, more than protection. So we're watching very carefully how Krishna is dealing. And that's the secret of understanding Krishna's lila, if one wants to understand them. Watch the interactions that are going on. Watch the sweetness that's being exchanged between Krishna and his devotees. Yeah. Does that answer your question satisfactorily? No. That was clearly... I tried to emphasize that with one word that Prabhupada said, unavoidable. Unavoidable difficulties. I can't remember the exact phrase in Tama Kinshina Gotsara. Maybe someone else could find it. Unavoidable misfortunes. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes. One should make progress in spiritual realization. In other words, we don't have to look for misfortune in the material world. It will follow us. It's the nature of the material world. What we should look for is service. So one should do one's duty. That's where one's mind should be focused, in doing one's duty. And then as we do our duty, sometimes good will happen. And every Sankirtan devotee... Every Sankirtan devotee, this is one of the glories of Sankirtan, you go out and distribute. And some days, it's like magic. And people are taking and everything is working. And other days, it's a complete disaster. So to remain steady and focused on that, on that I'm doing my duty and trying to keep one's consciousness good is glorious. Good means depending on Krishna. There was one very, very experienced Sankirtan book distributor who was in Perth a few years ago. And every day he would go out and distribute. He's an old friend of mine. And he said, boy, the people in Perth, really, they don't like books, this, that, on and on. Every day he would say something like that. Then one day, he said, guess what? It was just me all along. I changed my attitude, and then everyone was taking a book. So, very much, again, our attitude is so important. And what's the attitude, the proper attitude, is dependence on Krishna and trying to serve him, and while serving him, depending upon him. So we don't have to look for difficulties. At least, my experience, difficulties look for me. You don't have to. They'll come. They'll come. You don't have to look for difficulties. Just be focused on your duty and trying to depend on Krishna. We shouldn't look for difficulties. We shouldn't be sadists, masochists. Look for trouble. It's already there. Calamities must come. And the devotee is one who doesn't put his effort into trying to mitigate the miseries of the material world, but rather into trying to please. Yes. Yes. Excuse me. And the level is going to be raised again, too. From all that Krishna can give his devotees protection, and we go to the great Father in the sky, save me, save me, save me, like that. Like Prahlad didn't do that at all. But more wonderful than that is to be in relationship with Krishna, to be with him, to be in his association. And now, I'm not sure if it comes tomorrow or the next day, probably tomorrow, it takes another level up on relationship. So now being in relationship with Krishna is the most wonderful thing. And Kunti Devi prefers that to being distress-free, free from all the stress. And now it's going to be brought still higher. Of number 27, did you say? Yes. Anyone like to answer this? Yes. But he's actually, on one level he's reciprocating, but he's not reciprocating in a way other than mechanically, in one sense. That's the super soul. But when it comes to devotees, so the super soul is samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stina priya. I'm equal to everyone, no one is dear to me, nor do I envy anyone. Everyone is just getting the fruit of their karma, basically. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya. But with my devotees, it's completely different. He has a special eye on them, and they have a special eye on him. Maya tateshu chapyaham. They specially live in him. What a wonderful phrase. They live in him. The devotees live in Krishna. They live in Krishna's mercy. Whether they're in the material world or the spiritual world, they're living in Krishna and Krishna's mercy. And Krishna is living within them, in their heart. He's alive in their hearts. For non-devotees, he's neutral completely. He's just allowing, basically, he's sanctioning the laws of material nature, their action, like the judge who's neutral. So one can't say that when the judge says 2 years in prison, he's not reciprocating with the criminal, he's just acting as an agent of the law. So in that sense, Krishna is not reciprocating. But yet, of course, we know that Krishna is making it all work. But in that sense, he's not reciprocating. He's neutral. But with the devotee, he's not neutral. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya. Is that all right? Or is that satisfying? Or you sure? It looks like something else is swirling around. When it comes out, when it comes to the surface, let me know. Was that today? Yes. Yeah. How could anyone? We don't have the ability to we identify with the body. We don't have the intelligence to separate out the soul, the consciousness. This is very subtle stuff. So we are all in the category of less intelligent. So how can we know you? And Kunti Devi is giving the hint in the next prayer by saying everything in all the names of Krishna in relationship to the devotees. So in the Adi Purana, as Krishna himself says, he who says is my devotee is not my devotee, but if one becomes a devotee of my devotee. Or you can say by becoming Krishna's devotee as opposed to a Paramhamsa meditator, through devotion, by Krishna's mercy, it can be done. So she's hinting at that. And that's what Prabhupada's talking about the devotees. Of the purport, the conclusion is from this point of view. Yes. I see what you mean. But what is being maximized or emphasized is the point that of dependence on Krishna. Things are under the point of a purport has to be understood as in a particular context, and you have to be able to extract the specific point from the context, and everything has to be understood in that respect. So to emphasize a particular point, and then the point again isn't we should put ourselves artificially in a dangerous position to get more of Krishna's mercy. But the point is that if we are in a situation in Krishna's service where we're forced to depend on Krishna, he'll be there fully to protect us. That's the point. Yes. Because you're right. I think your analysis is correct. Yes. Prabhupada really liked that when people went out and preached. Yes. Krishna says that. Ya idam paramam guyam. One becomes dear to Krishna. So that is a very nice point. It's a comment. Yes. Yes. And therefore this Krishna consciousness movement is really a preaching movement. Yes, and if we want to please Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, we should preach. And quickly one becomes recognized. I was hearing Prabhupada say that on a tape this morning. And what should you preach? He said, to surrender to Krishna. Become Krishna's devotee. Bolo Krishna, Bhajai Krishna, Koro Krishna, Shikau. Yes, nice point. Yeah, when you're preaching, and every preacher has their stories of how suddenly in the midst of a difficult situation Krishna showed himself. I have mine from my earliest days, or not earliest, but in preaching in Hong Kong when we really had nothing. It was so dangerous, so young devotees and everything, and we were so carefully protected by Krishna during those times, amazingly. And you know, sometimes you tell what happened and it doesn't sound like it so much, but Krishna lets you know his presence is there. But if we can't preach circumstantially like that, we should preach in other ways. If circumstances don't allow us to go somewhere wonderful and preach, we should just preach wherever we are, And if not, we can't even do that. We assist those who are preaching. And Prabhupada also one time, when he was establishing the farm communities, the rural communities, when he tried to do that, which this kind of has really failed to fulfill that part of Prabhupada's desire, the devotees asked him, what will be their preaching, those who are living there? And Prabhupada's reply was, their life will be their preaching. So it's not even necessary to go anywhere. Just at least that spirit should be there. Any Matajis had any questions? There are many farm communities. For one reason, she loved him. Who? Yeah, but it wasn't, they're not choosing Vipralamba Seva. So the gopis, they went in front of the chariot of Akura, they were going to stop it in any way they could. Mother Yasoda, ready to curse Nandamaraj for coming back without Krishna from Mathura. Not willingly. No one who, it's just natural. Ultimately, she's going to accept, everyone accepts Krishna's decision. But it's love, it's natural. Naturally, when one is with someone one loves, one wants to always be with that person. That's just natural. That's not the only thing in the consciousness, but that's one steady part of the consciousness. Mataji, did you ever? Through? No. To the degree that one depends on Krishna. The question Mataji asked, should we conclude that Krishna can be obtained to the degree we can attain Krishna is to the degree we suffer from calamities? Yes, basically. And the answer is certainly not. To the degree we depend on Krishna, he can be obtained. There are so many people who suffer calamities, and it doesn't help them one bit. But a devotee, when he in the course of his service, when something happens to him that is difficult, unavoidable misfortune, he depends on Krishna. And that habitual dependence on Krishna is the greatest gift, the greatest art. Looking at it from a slightly other point of view, in our life, every day so many things happen that we don't like, not only in our life, but every day. So we should watch ourselves and see how do we react to even minor misfortunes and minor calamities. Do we depend on Krishna immediately, or do we turn away from Krishna and depend on something else immediately? And we can see all these little misfortunes as Krishna preparing us, warning us, giving us practice for other parts in our life. So if we practice now to always depend on Krishna and always chant, then we'll more easily meet the more difficult ones. But again, it's not that according to one's karma, when one gets certain good times and bad times, it's unavoidable. And that's just according to one's karma. Yes. Is meditation in the mind or worship in the mind considered superior to worship in gross, in the material elements? If one can actually worship in the mind, and what's called bhava-seva, that is superior, because one is not dependent on something external paraphernalia. But it's very, very difficult to do that. And someone, on the other hand, could be worshipping the deities with great, great love and affection, and in a great bhava of love and affection. And that's what he's doing. So the purpose of the archana is to bring us to the point of that of seva with great love. So if someone is doing that in deity worship within the mind, then they've achieved that purpose. It's what's proper is to develop great love and affection for the deity. That's proper. And because sometimes we can worship, I have the experience, I worship with my deities with my body, but not my mind. So, and sometimes I could be worshiping with my body and attentive with my mind. But maybe one day I'll be able to worship with my body and with my mind focused, but with my mind feeling great love and affection. And then the things will be offered with devotion. So that's really what we're trying for. So the externals aren't the main thing. I've tried, there was a time when I tried to, I worshiped my Prabhupada deity in my mind for years, actually, years ago. And the wonderful thing about offering things mentally is that there's no restrictions at all. But one shouldn't be in the presence of the deity when Radhashyama Sundar and Krishna Balaram and Gonetai are right here, and then go in one's room and only worship in one's mind. They're right there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimati Kunti Devi ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.